Do you have any information about somebody complaining about that in those days, or where everybody was happy, and the first articles come just because either Glennie or Brooker were pushing them?
Well, of course, you're talking about the days, not that I knew them personally, you're talking about the days when you had to be fairly heroic to use any machine. Perhaps an analogy would be the very early motor cars. I think it was for convenience that Turing, I believe it was Turing, I might be sound corrected, Turing suggested that everything should be done in the teleprinter code. And I think people just got used to it. It was certainly one stage better than binary.
Next to the last question.
On this question, Erskine, Sir, in Geneva, on this question of the B line, there's a rather interesting historical point. The paper which described the model, the experimental model with two B lines, refers to the use of this new facility and mentions only that it was obviously clear that programs, subroutines, would need to be relocated. And this B line was suggested as containing a binary number which could be added to those instructions which had to be relocated. It was, in fact, a base address. Now, sometime between this first experimental model with the two B lines and the next model which you referred to, somebody, and I'd very much like to know who and when, had the idea that you could do very much more than this. In other words, they invented what is, in fact, one of the most important of all computer developments. And just one other point on this question of the autocode, which really was terrible. I mean, 5-bit characters were selected from things like the pound sign, the at sign, and so on. The report I heard, which may be libelous, is that Turing's attitude was that if you make computers so easy to use that anybody can use them, then anybody will use them.
Right, well, I'm not going to comment on the second point. On your first point, yes, it is very interesting, but almost impossible to pin down precisely the development of the original B-line concept as a relocation register into the fully-fledged concept as an index register. All I can observe is that that development took place between about late October 1948 and October 49. I also observed that on the B-line patent, there were four names. There was Williams, Kilburn, Tootill, and Newman. And talking to all those people, one just gets the impression that it was a development that took place over several informal conversations held over several months. And I would like to be able to say that on a certain day somebody said bingo, but no, I don't think so.
Kelly, really, next to the last question.
Just to answer that question, whether anybody complained about that 32 code, when we started to use it at Toronto, we were very much aware that it required a great deal of memory. We learned it ourselves and operated in it, but we hesitated always to impose it on other people. And as soon as we started to teach, we went to mnemonic codes. It wasn't until about 1954 that I'd say we had one that was completely independent of it. This was the transcode system developed by Pat J.N.P. Hume and Beatrix Worsley, and that followed immediately, really, and was on the A2 compiler of the UNIVAC. So it was about 3 years before we got rid of it in all of our teaching, but we continued to use it all the time. I probably could recite it now, but I don't think you want to hear it.
Stroke EAF, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, can I just come back very quickly and say that, of course, at Manchester they were developing the Mark I autocode, and I think Donald is probably going to say something tomorrow.
Voorhees, Lassell. I'm struck by some of the similarities between the Mark series computers and the 701, which leads me back to your item number 2 on the blackboard, namely the industrial cooperation. Is the relationship, or was it at that time, between Manchester and Ferranti an open public relationship, or was it a privileged relationship, or was everything that you were doing known to everybody?
Right. I think by temperament and by virtue of geography, the Manchester group were relatively independent. That is to say, They certainly had conversations with Cambridge and NPL, but it, I don't think, for example, Manchester people attended the weekly seminars we heard of. Perhaps Professor Wilkes could come back on that.
Could I just remark that there that...
Wilkes, as distance is going in the United Kingdom, Manchester is in the far north. The colloquia were at 2 or 3 weekly intervals, and sometimes we did get people from Manchester. I would have said that we knew pretty well what was going on in Manchester. They knew pretty well what was going on with us. In other words, it was an open situation.
Don Knuth, the last one.
I was wondering about the drum transfers. Does computation go on in parallel at the same time as drum transfers?
No. As I understand it, on the Mark One, that you had an instruction that says transfer from the drum using this control word, and everything stopped until that had been completed.